Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yeah! Oh, it is fight night here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. Alex Dono and Frank Zaffrey take you till 8 o'clock this evening. If you'd like to get in, share your infinite wisdom with us via the phone lines, 305-567-0560, 954-567-0560, or via the plumbers911.com text line at 56022. So, Frank, the Miami Marlins are about to sell for $1.2 billion, while the UFC sold for $4 billion about a year ago. What does that say about this sport we love so much?
Well, we knew when it happened, when the UFC sold, it was the highest price that had ever been paid for an athletic company.
Franchise.
Yeah, an athletic franchise. I don't know. I'm digressing off of MMA quickly, but, you know, these baseball, basketball, football franchise purchases are just brilliant because you don't have to make any money as a business.
Right.
You just wait for the TV contracts.
And the revenue sharing.
And then, you know, it's just an exponential increase in value over time. I mean, you just sit and wait. So these guys make a lot of money, and $1.2 billion is a heck of a return on the Miami Marlins.
Well, and I know that the UFC, they're going to be renegotiating because their TV contract with Fox is coming up pretty soon. So I'd like to see how much that second deal may skyrocket, because you know that WMEIMG, after paying $4 billion for the UFC, they're trying to find a way to get a return on that investment. And I'm sure the TV contract is going to be a huge part of that. And, you know, speaking on money and investments, a huge to-do is being made of, and rightfully so, George St. Pierre. You know, he Instagrammed out a couple of days ago the photo of him actually signing the bout agreement. George St. Pierre is coming back. It's going to be almost 4 years to the day when he makes his return, November 4th. It is going to be GSP against Michael Bisping for the middleweight title, Madison Square Garden. So November of 2013 was the last time George fought. November of 2017, he's returning. Is George St. Pierre, Frank, the big star that we think he is, or at least the big star that he used to be? Because I know that MMA heads and fans of his, and maybe this will reinvigorate Canada because they've been sleeping on the sport for a little while. But, you know, George St. Pierre, before his hiatus or his retirement or whatever you want to call it, was one of the two or three biggest stars in the sport. But a lot has changed over the last 4 years, Frank, considering how many new fans there are. I mean, 2013, Ronda Rousey had just come into the UFC, or might have been about to. She might have had her first fight the following month, if I'm not mistaken. But she was just arriving in the UFC. You know, her stars shined brightly for a couple of years, and now she's gone. But Conor McGregor had not made his impact on the UFC yet by that point, and he's brought so many new fans to the sport. So do you think the masses, the casual fans, who are the ones who move the needle and really make the UFC so much of their money when it comes to pay-per-view sales, is George St. Pierre going to be welcomed by the masses as if he never left and pick up where he left off money-wise, ticket sale-wise, pay-per-view-wise, or is it going to take him some time to earn some of those new fans? Because a lot has happened over the last 4 years.
No, I mean, I don't think it's going to take any time. I mean, what you just said, the casual fans, the masses. George St. Pierre is one of those names that everybody knows. If you ask somebody who doesn't watch the sport very regularly, name me a fighter, his name will likely come up as one of the two or three names that they're going to know. So that's the whole point of bringing him back, because you bring back a broader audience. And then the other point you already made is correct. You bring Canada back.
Yeah.
And no one else has been able to do that. You're absolutely right. The Canadian market has been sleeping on the sport absent George St. Pierre. So bringing him back, I'm surprised that his return fight isn't in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised they didn't try to
do that. Or in the UK, for that matter, because Bisping pulls huge numbers over there.
You know, I'm surprised that they didn't try to pull that together. But then as I'm saying that, I'm remembering that they did have an event in Canada, and George St. Pierre wasn't ready for that.
Oh, yeah.
So that's how it shifted to NYC. But regardless, bringing him back is a huge boost for the casual fan market of MMA. The diehards, They're there. But if you want to get the people that tune in occasionally, George St. Pierre is the guy that does that.
I want to circle back to GSP again. He's officially back. He signed his bat agreement. But since you brought up the whole aspect of diehard fans and hardcore fans, that very much ties into the big boxing mega event, the super fight, the freak show fight that we're just a couple weeks away from here. I mean, August 26th, Mayweather versus McGregor. They held their media day yesterday, Frank, and you know, we've really heard a lot of noise being made over the last week by journalists such as, you know, Kevin Ioli of Yahoo Sports, Dave Meltzer of MMA Fighting, who are kind of tracking the ticket sales, Darren Revelle of ESPN tracking the ticket sales and tracking the numbers, and there are a lot of tickets still available for that fight. Very expensive tickets. Like, you're talking about tickets from $2,500 and up. But I think the stat from Darren Revelle last week, and I assume this has changed over the last 7 days, but if you wanted to purchase six open seats all next to each other, there were 21 different spots in the arena where you could purchase six seats all in a row. That seems odd. But, you know, one person who doesn't want to hear about low ticket sales or bad ticket sales is Floyd Mayweather's Mayweather Promotion CEO, right-hand man, Leonard Ellerbe. Ellerbe, this is about a two-minute clip, but this is all great stuff here. Not only is he very defensive of the ticket sales, and he really wants to explain why the event is not sold out, he also goes on the offensive and really takes issue with the hardcore fans in boxing, to the point where Leonard Ellerbe claims the hardcore fans are the reason why the sport is no longer considered mainstream and why the sport is not really growing.
I'm actually tired of hearing that question, because right now we have over $60 million in the box office. And you tell me what part of that remotely looked like ticket sales are slow. This isn't the damn Rolling Stones concert. That's the only thing that sells out in seconds. And we're talking about, you know, when we're talking about tickets go from $500 to $10,000, you know, that's an expensive ticket. You know, so you have every CEO from every major company, you know, guys, it takes time for them to plan and get it together. The fact of the matter is that we have over $60 million in the box office right now, which is more than double any other live gate that's ever been done. The fight that they have on the 16th of September next month, our fight right now,
Canelo, Triple G,
we've got more in the box office right now, double than what they will have. And again, we're not talking, you know, a $2 or $3 million gate. You know, all these record-breaking events and the numbers that are associated with it, all are because of Floyd Mayweather, a little guy who's soaking wet, 147 pounds. You know what I'm saying? It's broke all these records. That's what's wrong with boxing today. You guys always complaining and looking for shit to complain about when there's nothing there. That's the reason why we can't be innovative. You know, that's what Floyd Mayweather has done differently from anybody else. You know what I'm saying? He's thought outside the box. Someone said to me, oh, something about tickets on sale at Costco. I'm like, we don't have nothing to do with that. But when you think about it, is that a bad thing? Opening this thing up to a housewife in Desmond, Idaho.
Where?
Iowa.
Oh.
Kansas. Somebody who would normally be able to have access to our fight. Is that a bad thing? For it to be accessible in Costco, that's what's wrong with boxing right now. Everyone wants to operate in this little small circle. And that's why this little guy over here at 147 pounds will go over making $1 billion in this fight because he's been able to think outside of the box. Everybody's operating in this little thing. You know, times change. You got to think outside the box.
So, Frank, is the establishment holding boxing back? I've often said that about, you know, Major League Baseball. They're starting to innovate in recent years, but it took them so long to embrace instant replay. It's still taking them so long to throw out those dumbass unwritten rules that piss me off so much. But as far as boxing goes, I mean, Ellerbe raises an interesting point there that, yeah, when you make a fight like this, Mayweather versus McGregor, all signs are pointing to it's going to be the biggest box office success in combat sports history yet. Most of the people who really know boxing and love boxing can't even stand the idea that this is happening. Is the establishment holding that sport back?
He's right, but for the wrong reasons. So boxing is a disconnected, discombobulated mess of competing interests that don't that none of whom respect the global benefit
right.
to the sport. That's why we have multiple champions in every division, and we have, you know, all kinds of competing. That's why we have terrible timing. Canelo Triple G, you know, lined up, you know, just a couple of weeks after Mayweather, Conor McGregor. I mean, it's just it's a shark tank of competing interests, none of whom care about the benefit of the sport in its entirety. And that process that began 20 some odd years ago has strangulated the sport. To the point where the young audience, the audience maturing into watching fighting sports, have gone away from boxing and to mixed martial arts. So all we're left with are, and I'm going to reference our great listener, and I don't mean this derogatorily, but all we're left with are the Sandys of the world, the older people who have, you know, who remember historic boxing, and of course would turn their noses up at this, and also yell at kids when they play in their lawn. So that's what we're left with. So he's right that the old establishment is maybe holding back some of what the Mayweather team is trying to accomplish, but the old establishment is all they have left.
Yeah.
Because of a mess in boxing that's not Floyd's team's fault, not just anybody's fault, it's everybody's fault that contributes or participates in boxing.
You know, what I'm really curious to see is, will Mayweather versus McGregor, will that help the sales of Canelo and Triple G the following month, or will it swallow it up to the point where people don't have any time left or any money left for that? Because I think that's the one of the things that the hardcore boxing fans are scared to death of, Frank. They hate the idea that, okay, we have this amazing fight for the purists coming up September 16th. We don't want this August 26th circus, people budgeting for that. Oh, I'm spending $100 on Mayweather-McGregor. I'm not going to turn around and spend $75 on Canelo versus Triple G 3 weeks later. I don't have that kind of money. I've got a family to feed. I don't care about that. I care about the freak show. Or is it possible that, because this is kind of how, this is what really avalanched my fandom for mixed martial arts, because, you know, I used to rent the videotapes and stuff of the old UFCs and the old Pride events, but to my memory, the first pay-per-view that I ever purchased was somewhat of a freak show fight in 2006, Matt Hughes against Hoyce Gracie. Like that was, as far as like historic UFC events go, that was a circus, because Hoyce Gracie had been virtually irrelevant already for close to a decade at that point. Matt Hughes was the best welterweight in the game, because that was right before, well, I think it was right after George St. Pierre took over, but Matt Hughes was still legit at that time. But that freak show and the circus around it got me so excited, I ordered basically every pay-per-view the UFC ever put on after that one was over. So is it possible that the freak show might actually ignite people's interest in boxing? And after you watch Mayweather versus McGregor, you might say, you know what? We got that Canelo versus Triple G coming up in a few weeks. Everybody tells me that's the fight I have to watch. Maybe it builds some momentum.
In the near term, no. It hurts Triple G Canelo for sure. That's why the UFC is about to take this huge hiatus. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing going on in the UFC for a while, because they know that Mayweather-McGregor is a black hole that's going to suck up pay-per-view money and viewership interest. So, you know, in the short term, no. And in the long term, Alex, it's great for mixed martial arts. I don't know how good it is for boxing, but that goes back to the point I was making. Floyd's team is only concerned with Floyd, as they should be. How do we get Floyd $150 million plus dollars?
Yeah.
They figured it out.
He may get, by the way, upwards of $300 million,
okay,
people
fine.
Are saying.
Okay, wow. So how do we get Floyd Mayweather $300 million? Okay, his team figured it out. Great job. You know, but is it to the detriment of boxing? They don't care. And that's what's different about the UFC. It's a league. So anything they do is done with the consideration of how it benefits the entire sport. And having the UFC having their number one fighter advertised to a new audience without having to spend a dime, and in fact getting paid for it, is a coup for the UFC. Boxing, I don't know. It's very debatable whether or not this is any good for them.
And the UFC also, they're going to officially on August 16th apply to be co-promoters, which I would imagine makes them even more money. They're going to officially apply to be co-promoters for Mayweather versus McGregor.
So they get a sign up somewhere.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
All they want is a sign.
Right,
up.
Which will it'll make them more money down the road, you would think. And it makes sense, because they've been busting their asses to help promote this, you know, with Conor. So I think it makes sense that they can be officially co-promoters for this event.
I mean, they're busting their butts, Alex, but I mean, it's just free publicity, yeah, really, at the end of the day. I mean, you know, and Showtime is running a series promoting Conor McGregor, and the only footage they can show is him in a UFC octagon.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is a brilliant move by the new ownership of the UFC. For boxing, though, Alex, I don't know. And there's a huge risk for boxing. A lot of people would say it's not a huge risk. But if Floyd Mayweather were to lose or to look silly but win barely.
Right.
Huge black eye for the sport of boxing.
How do they spin that? Because my theory on that is, and I'm not expecting this. Again, for those listening, if you think that this is my way of telling you I'm picking Conor, I'm not. Frank is.
I am.
Frank is. I'm picking Floyd because I was not dropped on my head as an infant the way that Frank apparently was. I'm picking Floyd Mayweather to cruise to an easy victory in this fight. But let's go over the what-if scenario. What if Conor does win? Or even if Floyd wins but looks very bad in the process, how does the boxing establishment spin that? Because I think they immediately have to throw Floyd under the bus and say, you know what? He's clearly one of the greatest of all time, but 2-year retirement, he's 40. He's not what he used to be. That's the angle you have to take.
That's where the cannibalism and nastiness and infighting and inappropriate behavior for the context of the entire sport is greatest. It will have greatest evidence. That, you know, the Oscar De La Hoyas and people of the world will say that you know, Floyd Mayweather is a bad fighter, or, you know, and they will make fun of him for his performance to the detriment of boxing, and the Floyd's people will of course spin it somehow, and maybe we get two fights out of it if it's close.
Yeah,
and I wasn't dropped on my head. My cousin pushed me down the stairs.
Whatever.
He's actually listening. He's actually in town, oh, so I have to give him a nod. But yeah, he shoved me down the stairs when I was like 5 in New York.
You know, coming up next, I have some audio from Floyd Mayweather Jr. that it angers me. This audio angers me. I'll explain why that is when we come back. But in the meantime, I want to tell you where you can watch this fight. August 26th, they're going to have it at the Quarterdeck Seafood Bar and Neighborhood Grill. Fort Lauderdale location. Plantation location, Davy location, you know, that's my usual spot, but I love every location of the Quarterdeck Seafood Bar and Neighborhood Grill. It's the place to watch a fight. Catch Mayweather versus McGregor at the Quarterdeck Plantation, Fort Lauderdale, or Davy location, August 26th. Going to be a great time for all because they've got the big screens there at the Quarterdeck, flat screen, high definition. Oh, you're watching that fight in style. The cocktails are amazing. Frank, we've been talking about these craft cocktails. The Quarterdeck has a spirit master. Look, it almost sounds like a Game of Thrones maester type of job, but yeah. It craft cocktails mixed up, concocted by the spirit master. Such great drinks at the Quarterdeck, and the Quarterdeck, they've got a drink special that never ends, the 2-for-1 happy hour. It goes all day, every day. The wine selection is very fine, very impressive at the Quarterdeck. I love some red wine. That's my personal favorite beverage. I think of all time, red wine is up there for me. And the food is delicious at the Quarterdeck. The sushi is world-class, and it's fresh. All the seafood is fresh, like the oysters and Maine lobster. I love the buffalo shrimp for my appetizer. That's really good. The chicken wings are awesome at the Quarterdeck. The meat falls off the bone, baby back ribs. The burgers, build your own with tons of fresh toppings. But you always want to. This is my advice to anybody going to the Quarterdeck for the first time. Save room for dessert because you want to have a slice of the key lime cheesecake. Oh, it's so good. It is the perfect way to finish every meal. The Quarterdeck is the spot to watch every UFC pay-per-view fight with zero cover charge. And with football coming up, make the Quarterdeck your football headquarters. So if you want to find the location nearest to you, visit quarterdeckrestaurants.com. The Quarterdeck is where you come for the food and stay for the fun.
Listening to Fight Night, served up by the Quarterdeck on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM, 96.5 FM HD2, and online at WQAM.com.
Back here on Fight Night, Alex Dono, Frank Zaffrey with you here. Frank, I do have some Nick Diaz news for later in the show.
Oh, God.
We'll do the tease. I'm not going to do the Nick Diaz news right now. Do you want it at 6:45 or top of the hour right at 7 o'clock?
I want it right at 7 o'clock because at 6:45 I want to tell you why I know that McGregor is going to do 7-plus million pay-per-view.
You're really trying to make that nickname for the fight a thing, McGregor.
I am. I'm doing it all the time.
It text me a yes or no, 56022 on the plumbers911.com text line. Don't text and drive, but yes or no. For if McGregor is going to catch on, for that being the nickname, it's like a celebrity power couple. The nickname that Frank Zaffrey wants to spread to the masses for Mayweather versus McGregor is McGregor. Will it catch on? Yes or no? 56022. on the plumbers911.com text line. Now, you're the first and I think only person I've heard that from. Did you make that up or did you swipe it from someone?
No, I read it. I swiped it.
Yeah?
Like anything that I say that's interesting, I've stolen it from someone else.
Oh, me too, but don't give away my trade secrets.
Yeah.
Speaking of Floyd Mayweather, I'd mentioned coming into that last commercial break that he said something on ESPN's First Take. I believe it was on Wednesday morning. Really pissed me off because how stupid do you think we are? Like, how stupid do you think the people are who are buying this fight? Like, just accept the fact that if anyone out there, I guess, is really dumb enough, Frank, to think that McGregor's winning this fight, nothing you're saying is going to sway them one way or the other. They don't need to hear this. And for those rational human beings like myself, who understand that Floyd is winning this fight, go ahead.
What do you mean rational? So those of us on the Irish bandwagon are irrational?
Or those of us who understand combat sports and what it would take to beat Floyd Mayweather. Yeah, those of us who are rational.
Yeah, I'm taking the bigger, stronger, harder-hitting guy.
Are you
younger.
Are you going to place a, you know what, we should do another bet. I did win
We're doing a big bet. Yeah,
I won the Damian Maia Tyron Woodley bet.
And that one cost me dearly because we're showing Mayweather at the three of the quarterdeck locations, Davie, Plantation, and Fort Lauderdale, and you asked for your payout to be a table reservation at quarterdeck Davie. God knows what that's going to cost me. So, and all I was going to get had Damian Maia been victorious over Tyron Woodley, I was going to get some Asian Kit Kats,
which I ate already since you lost.
And I'll bet you ate before the fight too.
No, I ate them after the fight.
Not because you were confident, because you'd never pay up on bets.
No, I only ate them. I promised.
By the way, this is true, Alex. Yeah. You don't.
No, I don't. But I've turned over a new leaf. I pay off bets now.
Now he's winning bets.
Yeah, now I keep winning bets after I've turned over. How does that go? I've turned over a new leaf, and now I keep winning the bets. But no, I didn't eat. I promised Frank some of the spoils, some of the things I bought when I was in Japan. They've got, like, Kit Kats of every flavor. We brought home some apple Kit Kats, some orange blossom Kit Kats, ginger Kit Kats, green tea Kit Kats with cherry blossom. Those were the ones that I was going to bring to Frank if he won the bet. But 4 days ago.
No, I was supposed to get the entire stockpile.
Oh, no, that couldn't have happened. The wife wouldn't allow it. You were going to get two boxes, and I ate them both. They were delicious.
I bet they were.
It's that cherry blossom that really put it over the top. The green tea was so-so, but the cherry blossom, once it hits your lips, it's so good. But here's what Floyd Mayweather said on First Take. It's an insult to my intelligence. This really pissed me off.
He's taller, has a longer reach. He's a bigger man from top to bottom.
Okay, that's true.
A lot younger, so youth is on his side. And I've been off a couple years. So, and now I'm in my 40s. So, you know, if you look at everything on paper, it leans towards Conor McGregor.
But no, you didn't look at everything on paper.
Yeah, he did.
You didn't look at the only thing that matters. You're 49-0 in boxing. He's never boxed. 0-0.
You know who else agrees with Floyd Money Mayweather?
Oh, God.
One of the great heavyweight champions of all time, Larry Holmes.
Punch drunk
my ass.
Can't think straight.
Larry Holmes explained
Larry
very
Holmes
clearly.
Past his prime.
And he's not going to box anymore.
Well, no, he's past his prime, just like common brain function.
But he knows the sport of boxing better than you.
Or maybe he hates Floyd Mayweather.
I don't know why he would.
I know the sport of MMA better than Larry Holmes does, and I know it's not going to translate to Conor McGregor winning a boxing match.
Floyd's just been knocking his sparring partners out left and right.
Yeah, and Connor is tweeting out fake pictures of knocking out his sparring partners.
How do you know they're fake? What do you mean fake?
Because Pauly Malignaggi gets tripped, falls out, which happens all the time.
How do you know he got
sparring.
Tripped? You're just going to take his word for
I
the story.
I will take his word for the
Why
story.
Why are you going to take just his word for the story?
Because Conor McGregor has a history of throwing sparring partners under the bus. This is a pattern. What he did to Chris Van Heerden last year, where he sent out that hashtag fake news, that footage, where he only edited together the footage of him landing punches and said, oh, look, I'm kicking this guy's ass. That was a deplorable thing to do because Chris Van Heerden, you know, Pauly Malignaggi, fine. He's retired. He's a broadcaster. Like, it's not going to hurt his pocketbook if Conor McGregor is lying about him. But Chris Van Heerden, this guy is an up-and-coming boxer trying to get famous and trying to make his way.
Who got whooped.
Who whooped Conor McGregor, and yet the fake footage that comes out in sparring was manipulated and edited. All he asked for was a fair play, let me release the whole tape so people can make up their own minds, and somehow that tape disappeared. Conor McGregor has a history of breaking the sacred bond between sparring partners, because sparring, taken out of context, especially when you manipulate and lie about it, is not fair to anybody.
I'm going to come back to that.
Okay.
But going back to another point you said that really irritated me,
okay,
that MMA doesn't translate to boxing. Your own Nate Diaz mm-hmm. has been hired many, many times to be a sparring partner for professional boxers, including, what's his name? Ward.
Andre Ward. Yeah.
They've hired him over a dozen times.
That's because Nick Diaz can box. Conor McGregor can't.
No, it was Nate they hired, but
either way, they can both box. Conor can't box.
So wait. You ready?
Yeah.
Now, this is the trump card. This is the one you can't get around.
Oh, God. Here we go.
You ready?
Yeah, okay. I'm ready.
Nick Diaz says Conor McGregor has a great shot to beat Floyd Money Mayweather. Now, wait.
Damn.
What are you going to say? Because Nick Diaz said that his brother Nate is a great boxer, and if Conor could put his hands on him a lot, like he did, then Floyd's in trouble. Now go ahead. Tell me Nick Diaz is delusional. Tell me he's irrational.
He's
high.
Tell
me he's stupid.
He's on the weed.
Oh, now he's a drug addict.
Well, he's not fighting. Of course, he's on the weed.
I can't believe you're speaking against your idol this way.
No, I'm just saying that he's not a great fight picker. Like he's clearly
Manny,
under
please
the influence.
Be recording this.
He's clearly under the influence of the weed. Like to say something like that, and also like you know, I think Nick Diaz wants to champion the cause of supporting his MMA brother. Like, I think he wants to champion that cause.
Yeah, because he does that all the time. He's always out there supporting his MMA brothers. No, he's usually at weigh-ins taunting fighters. He's not even fighting.
No, he's supporting his literal brother. Because hear me out.
All right.
If he can convince the masses that Conor McGregor really is a great boxer, well, Nick's brother, Nate, defeated Conor McGregor, outboxed him. So that makes his brother look great by that math. The effect would rub over to him saying, I think Conor McGregor has a chance to beat Floyd Mayweather, a legit chance. That just makes Nate Diaz look way better because Nate Diaz already beat Conor McGregor. So there you go. Nick Diaz has an agenda.
You're skipping the part where Nate Diaz lost to Conor McGregor.
That was not as convincing as the first fight. That was a razor close decision. When Nate Diaz beat Conor McGregor, it was a convincing submission victory after he touched him on the feet, knocked him down, dismantled him. That was a clear victory.
First of all,
the rematch was not clear.
Your revision is history. Nate Diaz did not knock Conor McGregor down. Conor McGregor shot for a takedown.
Well, yeah, but
out
he
of
was woozy. He was very woozy.
No, he was gassed.
So he lost his equilibrium. He shot for a takedown. That counts as a knockdown.
He
in my
had literally card. Punched himself out, hitting Nate Diaz in the face. And you know, look, Nate Diaz has a chin made of granite,
which is a big component to boxing.
It is indeed. But your boy Nick Diaz says Conor McGregor, he's got a shot.
Oh, well, listen, he's
Larry
under
Holmes.
The influence.
5 years reigning heavyweight champion says Conor McGregor has a shot. Floyd Mayweather, who's fighting Conor McGregor, says Conor McGregor has a shot. So look, you want to call us all irrational, fine, but that's a pretty good lineup. And then Frank Zaffrey picking Conor McGregor.
Oh, now
that's
you're doomed
four.
To fail.
I mean, come
I'm
on.
I'm fresh out of Kit Kats, but I'm not going to need him for you because you're not winning this one.
We're betting.
Okay, got to figure out what to bet.
I don't know.
Maybe I can pick up more Kit Kats in Epcot.
Are you going on vacation again?
Well, no. It's not a vacation if it's on the weekend and you're not taking days off. I'm going to pop over to Pandora, the World of Avatar, and see what's doing over there.
So you could, though, be researching for your Monday show. So you're going to take a vacation
I'm always
that.
Doing that.
You know, Epcot again. You're like,
No, Animal Kingdom
Do
this
you
time.
Take the most vacations of any show host here
no,
at
Zach
WQAM?
Krantz. No, Zach Krantz blows me out of the water. I don't know how he gets that much time off.
So it's you or Zach and then you.
Maybe. Because Zach.
And then the heavy lifters, Joe Rose, Mark Hockman, Channing Crowder.
I don't know.
Orlando. They just grind out.
Orlando just went on a 2-week vacation where he was like following 80s hair bands on tour. Like I think you have to realize.
He should never have told anyone he was doing that.
Well, he took like 100 pictures every single day.
Boy.
It's like, oh, here I am with Alice Cooper. Here I am with Quiet Riot. Like every day he went to Earth, Wind, and Fire. Like every day he was at another
concert.
Well,
I like Earth, Wind, and Fire.
I think only two members were there though. Yeah. I think it was just Earth and Wind. I think Fire took the night off. But no, honestly, like I don't think I take more vacations than anyone else here. In fact, I take one vacation per year. Just happened to be a long one.
If you were one of the two combatants that they needed to make this super fight, they would have never been able to work around your vacation schedule.
Well, not for the USADA testing.
No.
Anyway. Oh, and by the way, our Nick Diaz story, which is coming up at 7 o'clock, will be drug testing related.
Okay.
I know you're very anxious to hear this, Frank.
I am. I am indeed.
He definitely is on the weed. Fight Night continues here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
To Fight Night, served up by the Quarter Deck on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM, 96.5 FM HD2, and online at WQAM.com.
I think we've all heard from friends and even media members, because I've heard this from a couple of fellow media members, that they think that the final number for Mayweather versus McGregor, while it's going to be big, that it's going to be a disappointment. It's not going to be where they're setting the bar, and the building's not going to get sold out because of how high priced the tickets are. Frank Zaffrey, I got to hear this theory of yours, because you've been like yelling it from a mountaintop for the last 47 minutes that you have unlocked the key, or at least the reason why you truly believe this is going to be the mega fight that Mayweather and Leonard Ellerbe and Dana White say it's going to be. Like, you have unlocked the secret 2 weeks before the fight. You know it's going to be a smash success.
Yeah, I had the evidence now. I went up to Maryland for a family event. My mother's up there.
That's why you ditched me last week.
I did. I ditched you. I am hanging out with the family. My mother comes up to me and says, "Hey, can I ask you a question? Who do you think is going to win this Mayweather-McGregor fight?" And I looked at her like she had three heads. And I said, and then I gave her an answer. And I said, "Are you really interested in this?" And she goes, "Yeah, I think I am. I'm buying the fight."
And just for the record, like, has your mother ever showed interest in another fight ever?
She showed interest, you know, probably when I was very, very young, in the really big boxing events that everyone, any casual fan or anyone would have been interested in. But no. I mean, I've been doing this MMA thing for a long time, and I don't think she's ever asked me a question.
Much like my wife. I mean, my mom. I got to ask my mother if she wants to watch this one. Like, I don't expect they would just on their own order the pay per view, because they just don't like to spend money on things like they're the anti Frank. They keep the cable bill very low. But she may be wondering if I want to come over and watch it with them. They may be interested in it. I do remember her after Mayweather-Pacquiao. She was asking me who won the fight. How did it go? She was very intrigued by that one. So, yeah, maybe we'll do like a Zaffrey-Dono family gathering. We get the moms together. We get everybody together. They all watch the fight together.
I mean, I ran into a great friend out of Chicago, Bob Friedman, a couple days ago. Great guy. He's in town. He loves the Cubs. He loves the Browns. And now he loves this fight. Like, people are coming over to this thing, you know, that don't have interest in fighting sports. It's going to do pay-per-view numbers such that the world has never seen. What did Pacquiao Mayweather do?
Ooh, it was like
$5 million?
I think it was about 4.5.
So we're gonna go north of 6 on this.
Yeah.
This is gonna be the biggest pay-per-view in history, and I don't know how you top it.
Yeah, I'm going to see if I can find that exact number in a minute, because I know we talked about it a few weeks ago. But if you want to get in, share your infinite wisdom with us via the phone lines tonight, 305-567-0560, 954-567-0560, #560 on your cell, or you can text us at 56022 on the plumbers911.com text line. Yeah, I had some pretty decent fights in Mexico City last week. Good card. He had 7 first-round finishes at the UFC Fight Night event. And Sergio Pettis looked good, defeating Brandon Moreno. Had him up against the ropes in the later rounds, third and fourth round. I really thought he could have finished it, but still, he's an ascending 125-pound fighter. I don't think he's ready for Demetrius Johnson yet, but maybe in a couple of years. He's only 23 years old, as Pettis. A friend of mine, I've called many of his fights in the regional circuit. Nico Price was an underdog, stayed undefeated. TKO'd Alan Joban in the first round, just clipped him. Just rocked him with a right hand, an overhand right, straight down the pipe. And I loved when Nico was talking after the fight was over about how, like, oh, I've been away from my kids for 3 weeks training in Mexico City. I feel bad for my wife because my kids are as crazy as I am, and I need to get home to help her out, because I've seen firsthand this Nico Price, who we've interviewed before, is just a nonstop energizer bunny. Like, he translates that into the octagon. But I thought the most disappointing aspect of that UFC Fight Night card last week was, what do we do now with Rashad Evans? Ugh. Like, Frank, where is Rashad Evans now at this point in his career? I know it was in Mexico City, so the altitude was a factor, but Alvi was clearly the fresher fighter throughout the 3 rounds, and Rashad Evans used to be a cardio machine, right? Like, I know it's tough when you're virtually double the altitude of Denver, Colorado. That makes it tough on the heavier weight classes. The 125ers, not so much. The 185ers, yes. But still, Rashad was in the inferior cardiovascular condition to his opponent. And in all of Rashad's recent losses, he's lost four consecutive fights. He's looked passive and inactive. He fades in fights when he used to be he used to always be throwing and varying his attack. Like, he would do an amazing job mixing up the body shots with the overhand rights, with the takedown attempts, and used to land his takedown attempts with a high percentage. Like, he had so much trouble taking Sam Alvey down in that fight. And so the guys that Rashad has lost to now and consecutively was Alvey last week, Daniel Kelly, who he should have beaten. Those were both middleweight fights. Then at light heavyweight, lost to Glover Teixeira and Ryan Bader. And actually, the only two wins that Rashad Evans has since 2012 were against an elderly Dan Henderson and Chael Sonnen when he was coming out of his prime. So, like, he's not really won an impressive fight since Phil Davis in January of 2012.
He is not in cardiovascular shape, in my opinion, because his body is broken. And so he's not able to train the way he used to train. And I don't know what he's chasing right now. It makes me sad. I hope that he is okay financially. He's had a tremendous career, and so I hope everything's okay with him that way, because what is he doing that deep in a card on a fight night show in Mexico City, a name of that magnitude? Why is he even doing this?
Yeah.
Why isn't he doing broadcasting, by the way?
Yeah, he's really
What
good
happened
at that.
With that?
Really good at that.
Did he just get bumped because, you know, some of the guys like Brian Stann are so fantastic, and Dominic Cruz are so fantastic at it?
They are really good at it, but I would put Rashad in that conversation.
But they rotate these active fighters that I don't
Daniel
think
Daniel Cormier gets on a lot of bread. He's good as well, but I think Rashad can hang with any of those guys. Tyron Woodley gets on UFC Tonight shows.
Well, here's the thing that's always aggravated me about that, just quickly, is that they rotate active fighters in. Mm-hmm. Dominic Cruz is an active fighter.
True,
Daniel Cormier is an active fighter.
Yeah.
And it's kind of inappropriate because you don't see that, they're not rotating like active NFL players into NFL shows.
They do that in boxing, though, so it seems to be like a common combat sports
thing. Rashad Evans, a retired great fighter with a lot of experience. I don't understand why he doesn't have a role in that. I don't understand what's going on. I can't explain it. And, you know, like Tyron Woodley, our current welterweight champion, Rashad Evans, when he was at his prime, was very unpopular. So maybe there's just something he's still chasing, some glory he still wants to have. Because nobody liked him. The casual fans didn't like him when he was a champ.
Why do you think that was, by the way? Because I never understood it.
I can't explain it.
I think it came down to, because the only like real factor I could see as to why so many casual fans didn't like Rashad Evans or don't like Rashad Evans was when he had that feud with Rampage. Just Rampage was so beloved. It's like people drew the line in the sand. They said, I'm a Rampage Jackson guy, not a Rashad Evans guy. Because what reason did Rashad Evans ever give not to like him? Always sportsmanship, exciting fighter to watch.
Well, he had the thing he used to do with his chest. Remember when he taunted, like when he knocked Chuck Liddell out?
Tweak the nipples?
Yes, and that rubbed people the wrong way. But you know what? There, a lot of people do a lot worse than that.
Yeah, sure.
And guys, let's not forget, Frank, great point. He kind of mocked Lyoto Machida in that title bout, and then Machida kicked his crap out of him. I think it was in the first round.
Yeah. He knocked there, and that was when Rashad, you know, when he lay knocked out with like the leg twisted and the mouth open, like it was a really horrifying image. And I remember hearing the story about this like real D-bag fan. Like Rashad was doing like a fan autograph signing somewhere. And you know the image I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
After Lyoto knocked him out, and like he looks like a CSI like body. Like the way
he fell, he looked like he had died.
Right. That's what I was saying. Like he looked like a body you would see on a TV show or something. And it's like the most haunting image of his career. You know, an awful photo snapped right after the most brutal knockout loss he's ever suffered. He was doing an autograph signing a couple of years later, and you know, people are like standing in line, Rashad, can you sign this picture? Can you sign these gloves? And some D-bag fan walks up to him with that picture, like that picture of him unconscious, you know, mouth open, can you sign this? And thank God he said no. Like what are you doing, dude? Like, I'm not signing that. And then that fan started complaining about the message on the message boards about Rashad being a bad guy and all this. And then we found out that was the cause of it. It's like the guy can't catch a break.
Tell me why Tyron Woodley is not popular. Explain to me why Rashad Evans wasn't popular. Explain to me why John Jones, much of his career, hasn't been popular.
But then
look, Rampage Jackson was a much bigger jerk outside the octagon than John Jones. People love him. Yeah. I don't understand how it works, but there's something happening.
Well, do you think there's a racial component with any of those
guys?
Well,
no, because you got
Tyron Woodley seems to think there
is. No, but I always say no way to that because you've got Rampage Jackson's a screaming example to why that can't be true.
Well, I mean, I think for Tyron, he's had a string of boring fights. I think that hurts him.
Yeah, but what drives me crazy about that, and look, I like Tyron. I'm obviously a huge Damian Maia fan. But in defense of Tyron, George St. Pierre is the safest champion we've ever had. He's the 5-round go-to-the-judge scorecard specialist.
Yeah, still to this day, I don't understand. And I love George St. Pierre, but he really didn't have a whole lot of appeal to the casual fans with just all his sheer dominance and grinding out decisions. Like, you know, there were a handful of fights where George really shined. Like, the fight with Carlos Condit was really exciting when he got knocked down with a head kick and came back and won, you know, the way that he blitzed Matt Serra in the rematch. Like, there were some exciting fights in there, but there were also a lot of just one-sided, lopsided, boring fights, and he's still
beloved. Dan
Hardy
and Jake Shields and Nick Diaz.
Well, that was one of the greatest fights of all time.
No, but where he's just holding you down.
I know. In fact, I didn't like that fight.
That's
why
I thought Tyron Woodley, I mean, that was brilliant coaching by our mutual friend Dean Thomas. That's how you beat Damian Maia. You can't go for knockout punches because
you're leaving yourself open.
Exactly.
7 o'clock hour fight night coming up next here on WQAM.
The home of the Dolphins, the Canes, and South Florida's official football station. 560 WQAM Miami. 96.5 WPOW HD2 Miami. Online at WQAM.com and on your mobile with the TuneIn app. It's time to lace them up. This is Fight Night on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM, 96.5 FM HD2, and online at WQAM.com. Fight Night is served up by the Quarter Deck. Come in for the food, stay for the fun. Now your hosts, Frank Saffery and Alex Dono.
Yes!
It is. 7 o'clock hour of Fight Night here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. So during the commercial break, we always do this once per week. Frank and I, we compare notes on Game of Thrones. You know, we're both caught up. We saw last week's episode, which you would say that ended on a cliffhanger, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
With someone like not going to tell you who. Spoiler alert. But a couple of pretty important characters seemingly sinking to the bottom of a very deep river. Like, how do rivers get that deep? Oh, the Trident.
I don't know. I don't know how they get that deep. Maybe it wasn't that deep. It was just murky.
Could have been murky, yeah.
But, you know, I get done. This season 7, I get done watching an episode. I feel like I just watched the most entertaining UFC card. Like, I'm exhausted.
Yeah,
and
oh,
I want to talk to. I just want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, they need, you know how they do the post-UFC show on Fox Sports 1?
Uh-huh.
We need, like, a post Game of Thrones show.
Did they do one? They did one on HBO last season.
I haven't heard about one now. They just go right to Ballers.
I watch a lot. Yeah, you're right. I don't think they do one.
Which I enjoy.
I haven't watched
that
since the first season. I watched the first season. I haven't watched it since.
It's like candy to me.
It's
too many
things
silly
to watch.
Well,
yeah, that was why. I'm like, life is too short to watch this every
week. No. It's, you know what it is? It's Entourage, but in the athlete world.
Have you heard of or started watching, are you a Netflix guy? Do you have Netflix?
I have it. I don't use it very often. My wife uses it a lot.
So you're probably not, there's a show called Ozark.
I've heard of it.
It came out last month.
Yeah.
I want to say I'm 5 episodes in out of 10, maybe 6 episodes in. Here's the problem, though. 2 different people told me, and it's not to say I'm not enjoying the show, because I am, but 2 people told me, 2 different people, don't know each other, no connection. They both told me before I started watching the show, you have to watch this. It's as good and maybe will be better than Breaking Bad. That's how it was sold to me. And it's not. It's good. But since it was 2 separate people built it up to me that, hey, this is like Breaking Bad. One guy said, I think it's better than, which is a ridiculous thing to say when they're 1 season in. But this one guy told me, I think it's better than Breaking Bad. So now I'm watching the show. And while I'm enjoying it, I'm kind of picking apart some things that in my mind don't make a whole lot of sense in the show. So it's like I can't enjoy it the way that I should be enjoying it because people tried to sell it to me by comparing it to my favorite show of all time. It's hard to live up to that.
It's like saying I wrote a great book. I think it's going to sell more copies than the Bible.
Yeah, you should
do
that.
No, I mean, you know, Breaking Bad.
Unless it's one of the Game of Thrones books. I think they probably should sell.
But as much as I love Game of Thrones, Breaking Bad, the greatest series that has ever been
on
television.
Fair.
And the inaugural episode, the pilot episode, maybe the best pilot that has ever aired for a television show.
Yeah, and I like the way it ended. It's really hard to pull off a final episode. I think they did about as damn good of a job as you could.
They didn't pull a Seinfeld or a Sopranos.
No, thank God for that.
Yeah, thank God for that.
Thank God for that. But no, it's like, and we were talking Game of Thrones before during the break. Manny Chang is all upset because like he's been catching up on the show. You started watching it maybe a month ago? You started watching it 2 weeks ago. He started watching Game of Thrones, and he's already almost at the end of season three. But what was it last night? Last night he watched The Red Wedding, and he's like he's got PTSD. Like he's shook by The Red Wedding. Like he can't get over it. I'm trying to tell him, bro, listen, I know you had a thing for this Robb Stark. Catelyn, move on. Find new characters to love.
You know, I'm envious of people like Manny, though, because he gets to just indulge his Game of Thrones desires whenever he wants.
Yeah.
We have to wait what feels like years for the next 7 or 8 episodes to come. We only have 3 more episodes in this partial season.
I think they're just doing 8.
And then we have to wait for, they're just doing 7. And then we have to wait for the remaining 7. And God knows when they'll show that.
A year and a half from now, I think.
Oh my God,
I can't do this.
I won't make it. I don't know if I'll live that long.
This is why I'm trying to find these other shows like Ozark to watch, and you try to sell it to me being better than Breaking Bad. You're only going to disappoint me.
I started seeing
that.
A doctor more often. I just make sure I could live to see the end of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, like did you hear about? It was a really public story about this mega Star Wars fan who was going to die like a week before the Force Awakens came out, and so. Like Lucasfilm and Disney, they let him see it early. I think it might have killed him early though.
Do you think they verified that he had terminal illness?
I'm sure they did.
Because that would be kind of a morbid exercise. Hey, go make sure this guy's going to die in 6 days so that we can release.
And the sad thing is, a lot of people would probably lie about that to see the movie early.
Absolutely. How about the hack that happened at HBO where somebody downloaded gigabytes of data that included the Game of Thrones episode that just aired,
and I read them all,
and they released it.
I hated myself for reading spoilers.
You did?
I did. I can't stay away. When a good spoiler comes out, I can't stay away from it. And I just do it to impress my wife, because when we're watching the show together, like I'm predicting all the stuff that's going to happen.
Oh, you ruined it for yourself, though.
I did, but she thinks I'm so smart. You gotta keep the relationship fresh, even when you've been married for 6 years. Like my wife thinks that I am like some kind of a fortune teller. Like I can see the future in Game of Thrones because I'm saying like, you know, I'm pretty sure Daenerys is gonna take her army to such and such spot, and sure enough, that's where they show up.
I'm gonna Facebook your wife tonight and break this sham you're running with her. But let me ask you one more thing about Game of Thrones without giving anything away.
Okay.
Did the world get suddenly smaller? Because people were getting to places.
Yes. Yeah.
In speeds that didn't seem realistic.
And it's, especially that Euron Greyjoy. Like, he can take his fleet from one damn side of the continent to another in like 2 scenes in the episode.
Guys, come on, man.
Maybe there are Gulf Stream-like currents running around this imaginary planet.
Or they get on like a Concorde and like fly across and like before they get on their ships. Don't worry.
Listen, the only Joy thing I know right now is that the main character named last name Joy just lost his main part. That's all I know.
You have so much. Yeah. So much to experience.
But see, the thing is, like,
and his sister told the father, "I'm going to rescue my brother." That's all I've seen so far.
Thing is, you're so far behind where Frank and I, like, we're so woke compared to you are.
Yeah.
We can talk about some of this stuff, and you're so far behind. Like, there's no way this is spoiling anything for you because you have no idea who we're even talking about.
That's true. He's far enough behind that we could actually be very explicit.
If he was 3 episodes behind, like, we'd be pissing him off to no end. But he doesn't even realize how behind he is. 56022 on the plumbers911.com. Text line. You can get in via the phone lines at 305-567-0560 or 954-567-0560. It really upset me these last few weeks the way Conor McGregor is treating his sparring partners. Do you want to hear what Pauly Malignaggi had to say about him, former two-time boxing champion?
All he's doing is tweeting about Conor McGregor.
He won't stop.
It's been going on for like 10 or 12 days.
Once upon a time I unfollowed him because he used to tweet even more than he does now. I refollowed him a while back, but Pauly Malignaggi, he used to call himself the Twitter King. He would hashtag every tweet with TK, and he would tweet every 30 seconds of every day. Life was too short. I had to unfollow the guy, but eventually I jumped back on the bandwagon. But here is what Malignaggi had to say. The former boxer agreed to be McGregor's sparring partner and says, this is from USA Today, by the way, and says things began to go bad immediately after arriving in Las Vegas, starting with his living conditions. Quote, "It's in a dilapidated neighborhood. It's a rundown house," Malignaggi said. "I mean, yeah, it works, but it's not really what you expect. It reminded me of some kind of crack house that had been barely renovated a little bit." During his second and last sparring session, Malignaggi said McGregor pushed him to the ground. That's what I'm saying, Frank. Malignaggi, laying on the canvas, was captured by a photographer and shared on social media, making it seem like McGregor had knocked him out. He proceeded to leave McGregor's camp. Quote, "This guy is one of the biggest dirtbags I've ever met in my life." What a great thing to call somebody.
One of Conor McGregor's regular boxing sparring partners, an Irish boxer, has recently come to Conor's defense.
So you don't think he's sticking up for the Irishman?
And said that this guy, how do you say his name?
Malignaggi. If you really want to hear it the Italian way?
Yeah.
Malignaggi.
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 Yeah, there you go.
All right, so that guy, whatever, his Irish boxing sparring partner said that when this tape does come out post McGregor, that he's going to be pretty embarrassed.
Why don't they release it pre-McGregor?
I'm not sure. But they
this is like Trump's tax returns. Like, you're just saying, we're going to release it. We're going to release it right after the fight. Nobody's going to care after the fight. They're never going to release it.
I think they are going to release it just to make him eat crow because I don't doubt that Conor McGregor is editing what comes out because that's what that you call that PR. But you have to have successful moments in order for there to be footage of you having successful moments. And so the fact that he's having successful moments against very good boxers is a very good sign.
Well, very good boxers, but none of them are Floyd Mayweather good.
They're younger, bigger, stronger,
so
faster.
On paper, they all beat McGregor.
They all beat McGregor.
Here's the rest of the Malignaggi quote. "This guy is one of the biggest dirtbags I've ever met in my life, bar none. I was amazed at what a dirtbag this person is. I don't care if we never speak again. My life is fine if I never see Conor McGregor again." Malignaggi continued ripping McGregor, saying the MMA star's team had, quote, "a false sense of security throughout the training camp because he's a expletive." I'm not even sure what the word was. It says expletive on the note I'm reading. "He doesn't like that. He doesn't want to be put in those positions. He wants to be the front runner," Malignaggi said. "He wants to be the guy who always has the advantage because when he has an advantage, he's a big man. When he gets tired, he wants out of a fight." Well, there you go. Mayweather's going to make him tired. 12 rounds, Frank. 12 rounds of the sweet science. McGregor's not used to it.
Malignaggi's negative tweets about Conor McGregor started not so negative, and as he's been tweeting, have gotten more and more and more nasty, and to the point now where these tweets are downright despicable and filled with hatred and vile. And so it's an interesting process that we're watching this guy go through in terms of dealing with what has happened to him in the Conor McGregor camp. And I'm not so sure that the truth isn't more on the side of what Conor McGregor's team is saying.
You know what?
Why take his word for it just because he tweets every 30 seconds?
Well, and I guess, I'm hyping up this story because Malignaggi, to me, seems like a semi-honest guy at least. But we can agree none of this is going to matter once the fight is over because if McGregor gets clowned, what does it matter what happened with his sparring sessions with Malignaggi? Or if McGregor, some miracle happens and he defeats Floyd Mayweather, I'm probably going to start being on your side of this, Frank, and say, hey, maybe Pauly was making this stuff up.
Text line, Dono, they're not releasing it to avoid giving Floyd any footage. I'm embarrassed that I didn't have that response to you, but thank God this texter did.
Well, and also, here's the puzzling thing about that text. The text is signed, you know who. But I don't know who it is who wrote that.
Well, it's a smart guy. It's a smart texter.
Right, but I don't, like, the texter
You think I have your phone number memorized. I don't, because the texter says, Dono, they're not releasing it to avoid giving Floyd any footage. Element of surprise, dude. Signed, you know who. But no, I just either tell me who you are or don't. I don't know who you are.
This hey, don't the, hey, don't get nasty just because he gave you a solid answer as to why they're not.
Clearly, his judgment and other things is flawed, so that may carry over.
Wait a second. Remember, when you say things like that, you're saying that Nick Diaz's judgment is flawed.
Oh, my God, you bring it back to that. Oh, you know, I have the Nick Diaz news.
Okay.
So Nick Diaz, you know, Dana White speculates he's never going to fight again. He's not officially retired, though, because Nick Diaz is still in the USADA testing pool. But given his lengthy layoff, this is a story from BJPenn.com. They love following the Nick Diaz news. Given his lengthy layoff, there is an increasing doubt that Diaz will ever return to the cage. UFC president Dana White, for example, is not optimistic. I highly doubt it, White told MMAJunkie.com. I don't know. I honestly don't think that, and I can't speak for him. You'd have to speak with Nick himself. But if you ask me, people ask me, do you think Ronda Rousey is coming back? No. I think Ronda is going to retire. Ronda hasn't retired, but my opinion is I think she will. I don't think Nick Diaz will ever fight again. I just don't think he has that desire anymore. While Diaz isn't cashing any UFC checks these days, he's making ends meet in other ways. What industry do you think Nick Diaz is now investing in, Frank? Can you guess?
Well, I hope it's marijuana, which was just legalized in California for recreational use.
Namely, by partaking in the booming marijuana industry. Nick Diaz is now involved in that. Unfortunately, this sort of activity doesn't exactly jive with the rules of the United States anti-doping agency, USADA, who oversee drug testing in the UFC. In fact, Diaz says USADA carefully times their visits to him so that they overlap with his marijuana-related work, which, of course, tends to involve smoking. Let me add my own commentary here for a second. That doesn't make any sense because, I mean, maybe USADA just likes to know where he is and if he's around the weed, but this is all out-of-competition testing, and they're not supposed to care what kind of recreational drugs are in your system out of competition.
That's right.
You can only get in trouble for weed in your system if it's the day before, day after, or right after, right before your fight. So this doesn't even matter. But clearly Diaz is paranoid about this. Diaz said, quote, USADA knows where I'm at, though. Somebody over there is not doing their job. I mean, realistically, they showed up to one of my dispensary signings. Like I said, I got to do what I can with what I have to work with when I'm not fighting. The whole cannabis industry thing is a hit right now. So yeah, I'll book an appearance over there, and I'll go and smoke a bunch of weed, and it's a good time. So of course, Word is out that I'm going to be there, and so USADA shows up, Diaz says, when he's out at one of these cannabis events. But could it be that's just USADA saying, well, we know where Nick is going to be on this day, so that's where we're going to show up to get our sample?
Because Nick Diaz admitted that McGregor will probably win this fight with Mayweather.
It's all that weed he's smoking.
I am that much more in the camp that he's a smart dude.
Yeah.
And look, if you had a way to earn a lot of money that involved just sitting around with a bunch of cool people smoking legal marijuana, you could go get punched in the face 100 times. Which way are you going to go with that? Nick Diaz, not a dumb guy.
He's living the dream of a lot of Americans with what he's doing right now.
Exactly.
All right, we can agree on that.
We can agree on that.
But if you're wondering what Nick Diaz is up to, I don't believe he's retired. Dana White doesn't believe he ever fights again. He's still getting tested by USADA. Eventually, he will put down the joint and return to the octagon.
He'll come back for Anderson and Spider Silva, too.
Oh, do you see?
He'll come back for George St. Pierre.
You see they've signed the Silva-Gastelum fight? Like, should we even care about that?
Well, I think we should care from the perspective of Kelvin Gastelum being somebody who I think could be relevant. You know, moving forward in the sport.
Coming off a loss to Weidman, though.
Yeah, man, but he was so close
to
winning that fight. Yeah. Do you believe in Chris Weidman?
Not anymore. I think he's a shell.
Do you feel like he over-celebrated? I know we talked about this.
I mean, look, I can understand it because he's not had a victory in years. So
yeah.
You feel about that one probably the same way he felt when he beat Anderson Silva the first time.
Yeah.
It's been so long. But no, I just think, like, Chris Weidman suffered, and it was right before the Rockhold fight when he really started to suffer this precipitous drop. It's like something hit the guy overnight, because I used to think he was one of the best fighters on the planet, but didn't his boxing look a lot better back around circa 2013?
I think that it was just this sport is so good and so competitive that we weren't aware of how bad his boxing was because his wrestling.
In his last couple of fights, his hands have looked really poor.
Well, his wrestling is so good.
Yeah.
And, you know, now people are figuring out, you know, if you can avoid the takedown with Chris for a minute, he stands right in front of you and he backs up in a straight line and you can hit him.
Fight Night with Alex Dono and Frank Zaffrey continues next here on WQAM.
Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM, 96.5 FM HD2, and online at WQAM.com.
By the way, I neglected to mention earlier, Frank, that a couple people did say that Mayweather will stick, that that can become the official nickname for this fight.
Mayweather McGregor is a lot of syllables to get out of your mouth every time you want to talk about
it. That's why, like, Mayweather versus Diaz would have been a lot better. Like, if he had fought Nick or Nate, I don't care.
Yeah, but May Diaz doesn't have the same ring to McGregor.
But Mayweather Diaz still works. Like, that's, you're just under the syllable. Like, anything over five syllables is too much. Like, hey, Mayweather Diaz works, Mayweather McGregor, too much.
And look, when it comes to boxing, Mayweather anything is the only thing that works.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Well,
you
I don't know. Canelo Triple G is going to be big. It's not going to be Mayweather McGregor big, but Canelo Triple G is going to be fantastic.
Oscar De La Hoya desperately wanted this McGregor.
Oh my God, he is so mad over this.
He wanted it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. He wanted McGregor to fight Canelo, his guy.
Right.
He would have prayed to the Lord above to make that happen.
Here's something interesting. I'm going off on a tangent, but you're talking about De La Hoya. Sylvester Stallone is a De La Hoya guy. I think they're in business together.
Yeah.
Stallone, an investor in the new UFC ownership.
He is.
Yes.
I did not know that.
I wonder how that works moving forward or how that may work for another potential crossover super fight.
I mean, I feel like, though, if you're Sylvester Stallone, you probably have, like, limited investments in so many things. You can't even keep track of, like, what conflicts or what has to do with what.
But WME didn't invite guys like that in because they needed the money. They invited guys like that in because they wanted the promotional help.
Right.
So they have to believe that Stallone is interested in furthering their ends promotionally somehow.
Hmm. No, that is interesting.
When you buy a $4 billion company, you know, his $10 million or $25 million didn't make the deal.
What if in, like, a future Rocky spinoff movie, like, Apollo Creed's kid decides to take a UFC fight, like a crossover thing?
You know, De La Hoya was a promoter of Stallone's fight, Rocky Balboa's fight,
Mason the Line Dixon.
Yeah, who was Antonio Tarver, who was a real light heavyweight fighter. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who knocked out Roy Jones Jr.
We talked about that Oscar De La Hoya's banner was all over that movie.
He's into circus fights. I mean, Balboa at that age, fighting Mason Dixon.
And to be real, he never would have been licensed in real life, especially after the fifth movie. Didn't they reveal that he had brain damage? And they acted like that didn't happen.
Yes.
He never would have been licensed to fight.
Yeah. I think he was like, in the movie, he was about 60 years old.
Yeah.
Confirmed brain damage.
Yeah.
And grossly out of shape. And they said, let's do it.
And if you remember, when he was at the hearing in Nevada to try to get his license, they rejected him. And then he walked back in and he gave them this passionate speech about how much he needed this. And they said, yeah, you know what? That sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, let's throw safety to the wind. Because you really want to do this, let's make it happen.
Now, the Nevada State Athletic Commission is getting a lot of grief for sanctioning McGregor.
Right.
You know?
Well, and you know, to be fair, they still haven't officially given out the licenses, but it's academic. It's going to happen on August 16th. That's Wednesday. Wednesday is when, because Mayweather had to apply for a new license coming out of retirement. McGregor, I think he's already been granted a boxing license in California, but not in Nevada where the fight's taking place. They'll have to grant him his license. And the other thing that's on the table on Wednesday, I didn't know how serious they were about this or how serious they are about this, but both sides say they want to fight with smaller gloves. The normal size gloves for anything over 147 pounds, 154 and up, they're fighting 154. The normal size gloves are 10-ounce gloves. That's the regulation gloves. I didn't even realize you were legally allowed to do anything under that. But then I found out last week that you can be granted an exemption.
Right.
And I spoke to Kevin Ioli last week, Frank, and he says he's not expecting this to go anywhere. He thinks that both sides are just posturing by talking about it. But they've officially put it on the agenda.
Well, look, wait. First of all, both sides posturing. Mayweather brought it up. And what I love about it, when you're dissecting what's going on here, is that is Mayweather cracking under McGregor's taunting.
Yeah, because he doesn't want to feel small, right?
So is Mayweather saying, I'm hearing a lot about the fact that I let the fight go at 154 because I need the bigger gloves, so now I'm going to capitulate and give a bigger man a harder punch?
Yeah.
Is he playing right into McGregor's hands? Yes.
Although,
I mean,
let me say this. If you're Conor McGregor, be careful what you wish for, because, you know, for Mayweather, you may see some power you didn't know he had when he's wearing smaller gloves.
I don't disagree with you, but despite the fact that I'm a passionate McGregor supporter in this fight, it's an uphill battle.
Yeah.
He's overmatched from a boxing perspective. So if there's an advantage, take it. And you know what? If Mayweather hits harder than you thought, live with it.
Well, and you know what? For McGregor, and I do, like, still in a vacuum, like I'm playing devil's advocate there, I still do believe that smaller gloves would help McGregor at least a little bit, but maybe not for the reason people think. Because when people think, oh, smaller gloves, he's got the heavier hands, this gives him more knockout power. Don't forget that smaller gloves, lighter, he's got to hold his hands up to 12 rounds, Frank. He's not used to that in boxing.
And you say 2 ounces isn't a lot. It's a 20%
reduction. Oh, yeah. It's big.
You know, it's a big percentage reduction. So, yes, over 12 rounds, it will make a difference. And that was one of the reasons that some boxing insiders thought that Mayweather had gone with the heavier weight class, because 10-ounce gloves makes the punch a little bit softer from a hard-hitting guy, and he's got to hold those big gloves up.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, first, you know, even a 5-round MMA fight is shorter in longer rounds, but it's shorter in duration than a 12-round boxing fight. Plus, when you're fighting with MMA distance and you're a very good striker, like, McGregor can drop his hands during a fight in MMA and not be in any trouble. When he's fighting against Floyd Mayweather, he's got to keep his hands up for the full 12 rounds.
Well, now, that's a great point. See, I say no on that, and you're going to say I'm crazy, but if I'm coaching McGregor, I'm saying you have zero chance of outpointing Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah, okay.
So the hell with that. So keep the hands down if you have to. Take the unorthodox approach to the sport. And if he hits you a lot, he's going to hit you a lot anyway. He's one of the greatest boxers that's ever lived. You need the knockout. Save your strength. So, and you got to gamble that he can eat punches from a guy that size.
I guess you're right that if you're in that situation, you've got to take a unique balls to the wall approach.
Yes.
Like it would be a huge mistake if you get into a boxing ring with Floyd Mayweather and say, I'm going to try and follow the same game plan that Oscar De La Hoya followed in 2007. Like, no, you can't do that. You have to be creative.
You have to be different. And, you know, it came out recently, they asked about the Superman punch, which you and I talked about a couple of weeks ago. You know, that's the kind of unorthodox stuff that's within the rules of boxing that Conor McGregor is going to have to dig deep and try to use.
Texter writes in, my little opinion. Well, there are no little opinions, sir or madam. Mayweather, without a doubt, is a world-class boxer, but McGregor is used to taking elbows, knees, forearms, feet. So even with the lighter gloves, I don't know if Mayweather can hurt him.
Point and possibly, yeah, score points and possibly cut him.
Yeah.
But, you know, probably not knock him down. That's the conventional opinion, and I don't think it's wrong. And I think that's what Conor McGregor has to go into the fight assuming.
Yeah.
I can eat this guy's stuff, and I'm going to have to eat it to find my shot. He's looking for one shot. He's got 12 rounds to find one shot, Alex.
You know, we've entered now a period where the UFC is not putting on another live event until 2nd of September in Rotterdam, Netherlands, which is going to be headlined by Alexander Volkov and Stefan Struve. I like Volkov a lot in the heavyweight division. Should be a decent show, but and that's not a pay-per-view, by the way. So I think they're wisely approaching this to say that not only are we not putting on another fight between last Saturday and McGregor, but we're not putting on another pay-per-view until it's going to be late September, I believe.
Yeah, it's middle of September, I believe. And you know what? It's not a great card. It's headlined. It's got two title fights, but it's got the two lowest earning champions that
right,
we
and,
have.
And here it is. It's September 9th. That's when the Mighty Mouse versus Ray Borg fight is happening. The fight that he basically was willing to get cut over wanting to have that fight with Demetrius
Johnson.
And
we get Amanda Nunes, who did herself a great disservice.
Yeah, she's in the doghouse.
Well, and I think she did a great disservice with fans, because I think she was building some momentum. You know, and it's a shame. She's another one, Alex. We were talking about why Tyron Woodley isn't popular, why Rashad Evans wasn't popular. Amanda Nunes has all of the skills that should make her somebody you love to watch if you like watching women's MMA.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like there's very much energy or interest in her at all.
Well, this is what I would say for anybody like that, for Tyron Woodley or for Amanda Nunes. If you can create a perfect fighter with their skills and Donald Cerrone's attitude, you would have a huge seller. And listen, Conor McGregor is pretty close to that, right?
Yep.
Extremely skilled fighter who will fight anybody, anytime, anywhere, and does an amazing job selling every fight with his pre-fight trash talk, but then usually shows good sportsmanship after the fight is over, which is also important to me. But he's the total package, whereas Amanda Nunes clearly lacks the promotional skill to put herself over. And then she also now gives off the impression of somebody that if she's got strep throat a couple days before a fight, even if she gets cleared for that fight, she's going to say, you know what? I don't want to fight unless I feel perfect. Like, that's not the type of athletes who really go over with the fans in this sport. You want to think that these men and women are willing to put it on the line no matter what the scenario is.
That's a great point. And also to your point of sportsmanship, I don't think she won herself a lot of fans, Amanda Nunes, the way she conducted herself after beating Ronda Rousey.
Yeah.
She was incredibly disrespectful to Ronda Rousey. Ronda Rousey, not a nice person.
No.
Probably deserves a lot of grief.
Yeah, probably
so. But when you beat somebody like that, I think the ethic of the sport is you're a sportsman or a sportswoman. And she was brutal to her after that.
There's a lot of talk, by the way, about Ronda Rousey and the other four horsewomen that she trains with going to the WWE.
Yeah.
I think she might be okay with that. Here's, as long as she gets like a Brock Lesnar style sweetheart deal, which I expect she would get, because, and I'm not even saying necessarily Brock Lesnar money, but you can't expect Ronda Rousey. I don't think she's going to hold up well in that sport if she's got to be doing five dates a week like the normal WWE wrestler does, because they're all over the place, man, with the Raw and the Smack, even though they've split up the rosters, but they're doing house shows every week. It's like 300 dates a year plus that these guys have to do, and women with live events. I don't think you can expect Ronda to be willing to put up with that. But if you can get her on like an occasional show up a few times a month, Brock Lesnar style thing, then I think she'd be great at it.
You think Brock Lesnar ends up back in the Octagon? I mean, John Jones did ask for
him. You know what? That
sure
came
up. About it last week.
Yeah, right. But you weren't here to talk about it. I'm surprised by how many people have told me they don't want any part of that fight. I'm very surprised by it, because I would love that fight, Frank. I mean, don't you think John Jones has earned the right for a fun fight or a super fight? He's beaten everybody in that division. Okay, I'm not saying I don't want to see Jones and Gustafson do it one more time, because their first fight was epic. And yeah, Gustafson probably does deserve the next title shot, and he probably will get it, because if Brock Lesnar comes back, it's going to be at least 6 months before he's ready to go through the USADA testing pool and all that. So it's going to take a while to put this together. Like, I'm not saying this is the fight John Jones needs to do tomorrow, but I think John Jones versus Brock Lesnar, first of all, this is not Mayweather-McGregor. Like, it's not like Lesnar has never fought MMA before. He's a former UFC heavyweight champion. And yeah, juice to the gills, he did manhandle Mark Hunt last year. Even juice to the gills, that was still pretty impressive, what he did to one of my favorite fighters. And the weight difference, the style difference between him and John Jones, who I believe is the greatest of all time, that to me is an awesome fight, and I'd love to see it, but a lot of people have told me otherwise.
Yeah, I don't know why that is. Maybe they just think the ship has sailed on Lesnar, but let me say, I just absolutely love the idea of the villain calling out the villain.
Yeah.
I mean, John Jones is like a Game of Thrones episode.
This is like
the
when,
bad guy
you know,
wins.
No, this is like when Gus Fring took out the cartel.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. John Jones, man. The ultimate supervillain.
I would love to see that. 56022 is how you reach us on the plumbers911.com text line, but please don't text and drive. Will McGregor have more punching power than anyone Mayweather has ever faced? Mayweather has fought some very good but very small men. Will he have more power than everyone Mayweather has faced? I don't know. He's fought guys with some power before. Ortiz, Cotto, Shane Mosley passed his prime but had power at some point in time.
Boxers have power,
yeah,
man. That's
sure,
all they got.
Sure.
You know. So.
Well, people just think Mayweather doesn't have any power. I was about to say the Alex Dana show. I apologize. Fight night.
It's okay, man.
I'm sorry, dude. I'm sorry.
Hey, that comes on in 19 minutes.
Oh, sure. It's a shameless plug for me. Fight night concludes next here on WQAM.
Listening to Fight Night, served up by the Quarter Deck on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM, 96.5 FM HD2, and online at WQAM.com.
It is Fight Night. Alex Dano, Frank Zaffrey with you here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. So, Frank, what will you be doing or watching this weekend with no major fights on?
That's a good question. Some NFL preseason. We have some of that going on.
Yeah. Did you watch the Dolphins last night?
I missed it, unfortunately. Well, I had work, yeah. And I missed it.
Oh, so you actually – well, my work was being at the game watching.
I know. It. You've got a nice – I follow you on Facebook. You're at training camp all the time.
Yeah.
And you're the guy – in the room asking the pointed questions to the coach.
I asked the softballs.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. I let Omar Kelly ask the pointed questions.
You haven't got into any, like, you haven't started any beef with anybody in the Dolphins organization?
No, that's like, I don't feel comfortable with that because it's like, that becomes your workplace. You have to see those people every day.
Right.
I mean, if I ever were to get into, like, a beef with a player or a coach, like, I would hope that I'm on the right side of it. Let me just say that. Because I don't want to be one of these reporters who goes into a presser, like trying to be a martyr or trying to be an attention grabber to try to go viral on the internet. Because I think you come out looking bad with that.
It's still stressful, right? Does it make you nervous to be that guy who stands up? A lot of times that stuff's televised.
Yeah.
So you stand up and then you're like, hey, it's Alex from 560s.
And one of the cool things about it is whenever I'm in like one of these media scrums, like people will sometimes like get the screen grab of it and they'll show me the picture later. And now they recognize me by the beard now. Like that's
right.
become my trademark now.
Right. Any relationships with players you've developed?
Nobody I ever like chat with, not in the locker room, but Jay Ajayi, Jermon Bushrod, Michael Thomas, those are some of the nicer guys in the Dolphins locker room that give me the time of day.
Yeah, you got to make some inroads. You got to create some relationships, and then you'll get.
You'll
break some news. Exactly.
You know the deal. 56022 is how you reach us on the plumbers911.com text line, but please don't text and drive. Alex Dano and Frank Zaffrey with you here on Fight Night. So, Frank, do you think, is this the perfect fight for George St. Pierre to take on Michael Bisping? Because I think it is the perfect fight for him for two major reasons, in that it's not a fight that's going to get him mauled or injured even if he loses, right? Like, you're not going to expect, you lose a fight to Michael Bisping, you're probably not leaving in an ambulance after that fight the way that you might, you know, if you're going to fight another middleweight, if he were to fight a Yoel Romero or a Robert Whittaker, that could go much differently for him. So Bisping seems like a safer opponent, and it's such a more high-profile opponent than a Tyron Woodley would have been for him, right? Because that's not doing much for him business-wise.
Yeah, it has been my perspective for a little while now that George St. Pierre is back in this game for a handful of big-money fights. He is not fighting Tyron Woodley.
Right.
And he's not fighting Tyron because he doesn't respect Tyron. He's not fighting Tyron because Tyron's not going to deliver pay-per-views.
Yeah.
And so he's going to do this Bisping thing. And then I would imagine he'd go clear to the other side and try to do a Conor thing or a Nick Diaz thing again.
Please.
Those are fights he wants. I see him doing those. He's already told us he won't fight Anderson Silva because he thinks that ship has sailed. I think he's right.
Yeah, so do I.
So he's looking for some really big money fights, and I think he's back out of the sport again. I don't think he's interested really in being a champion.
And has he earned that right? Because I think he has. Like, I've heard like Tyron Woodley and some other UFC fighters have come out and said that they don't respect what George is doing or the reasons he's doing it for, that he's just doing this for a money grab, that he's not doing it the right way. Because in their mind, him doing it the right way would be, and this is probably selfish from their mindset because these are welterweights, but in their mind, him doing it the right way would be, I'm the greatest welterweight champion of all time. I come back to the welterweight division. I try and win my old belt back, compete with everybody rather than cherry pick my opponents. But I honestly feel when you're one of the two or three greatest fighters of all time, as George St. Pierre is, he's earned that equity with me as a fan. you know, when 99.9% of the fighters on the UFC roster don't have the swagger to be able to do this, I think George St. Pierre is one of those guys, and Conor McGregor is becoming another, but GSP is one of those guys, I think, and more so GSP because he was a long reigning champion. He, to me, has earned the right to come out of retirement and cherry pick fights. I think he's done enough in this sport.
Well, and what's the expression? Don't hate the player, hate the game.
Yeah.
If the UFC wanted him to follow the script that Tyron is suggesting, George wouldn't be back. So
right.
They let him do this.
Right.
He came back to do this, and the UFC agreed. So, I mean, that's the way it goes. And, you know, we've talked about Tyron. I mean, he's got popularity issues mm-hmm. and pay-per-view issues. He doesn't have fight acumen issues. So, you know, it's a shame for Tyron that he's not going to get that major payday, big money, big pay-per-view fight. But, you know, George is here for a cash grab. I mean, it's exactly right. And, you know, more power to him.
You think he beats Bisping? Because I could honestly, I think I'm picking Bisping in that fight.
You know, look, this is the difference in the fight.
Yeah.
Bisping's takedown defense has improved
so good
dramatically.
Now. Yeah, so good now.
And I remember a fight with Chael Sonnen. He beat Chael Sonnen.
Yeah.
Chael got the decision.
He got robbed.
But Chael, man, he was working for those takedowns. So I think that GSP could be in for some trouble. Catch a knee or something coming in. Bisping is much, much bigger than him.
And it's the reach. Because Bisping, like there are certain size matchups in MMA that kind of are a wash because of the skill sets of the fighters. But since Bisping uses the jab, uses the reach so well, I think he's really going to use that size advantage to his advantage, for lack of a better word. And then you couple that with the takedown defense. I can see Bisping with his footwork. I don't think it's going to be necessarily a lopsided, terrible fight. I think it could be very close and very good. Like this, I'm not saying don't watch this fight or it's going to be horrible. I think it could be a very good fight, but I see Michael Bisping scoring more points on the feet and really out-jabbing and out-striking George because of that reach.
You know what's weird about the middleweight division? This will be the second time in about a year and a half that the person competing for the championship, if they win it, they're going to immediately lay it down. Dan Henderson, final fight, if he had beaten Bisping, I thought he did.
Right.
He would have walked away from that belt.
Right.
And I would imagine GSP is not going to be preparing for Robert Whittaker if he wins, or Yoel Romero or any of those other killers in that division, Luke Rockhold.
Oof.
Oh, my God.
That would be a really fun fight, though. GSP and Rockhold.
It'd be fun for Luke.
Yeah, it would be.
Yeah, no. So it's interesting. The middleweight division, I mean, you have an unlikely champion now, and you had two different guys now who will have competed for it who have no interest in actually keeping it.
And also, would it be that crazy if Bisping wins and retains and he lays it down and decides, you know what, I've done everything I need to do in this sport? He's had a very long career.
He can't do it, Alex. He'd be called a coward because then everybody's like, look at you. You just ran. You got it, and then you fought Dan Henderson, and you fought a welterweight, and you ran away.
But being called a coward on speculation is probably better than fighting
There's
Robert
no
Whittaker.
Speculation. He fought a 50-year-old and then a welterweight, and then he ran away.
But he's had a long, prosperous career. Maybe now it's time to run away. Because what's the alternative? If you don't run away, you fight Robert Whittaker, and he knocks your head into the fourth row. That, to me, is a worse way to go out. I think I'd rather go out a coward than go out decapitated. Wouldn't you?
You know, Bisping almost drowned. Did you read that story?
Yeah.
He went out paddleboarding, got out too far, and then it was funny. I'll tell the anecdote quickly, but he did something that I would have done, and his self-deprecating relation of the story was funny, but he said, like, I was in a lot of trouble, and then a bunch of girls swam up to the board, and they were in a lot of trouble, and then the lifeguards finally came, and when they came, they said to him, are you okay? Because we only have enough room to take these girls. And he goes, yeah, I'm fine. And as soon as they left, he realized he was going to drown.
Oh,
and that's something I would do, you know, because you want to say the right thing.
I would have shoved the girls out of the way and gone on the boat.
My swimming is pathetic. Yeah, I would have had to. Look, I'll just hold on lightly. You got to bring me with. Anyway,
So
he survived.
So I guess, and I guess we're not going to have a bet for this one because it sounds like we're both going Bisping.
I think I am going to go Bisping.
We got a lot of time.
But we got
November.
August 26th where I'm going to clean house on you. Have you ever paid up on a bet I've won?
No, but there's a first time for everything.
Yeah.
I'll pay up. I keep winning, though. Like, what am I going to pay up now?
You know what we could do?
What?
I've got your table reserved, right? Quarterdeck Davey.
Okay, okay.
And then while you're watching it, the bet will be a kind of a double or nothing, where if McGregor beats him, you get a tab.
Oh, no. I'm down with that.
In that case, I'm not going.
And I'll just have my manager waiting, you know?
And wait.
And if Mayweather wins, the only thing you get from the server is a big fat gift card to use on your next visit.
So, what do you mean?
Well, you'd be comped through that visit, and then we'd give you a gift card for your next visit. You know, we'd give you a nice gift card.
Okay, great. So I win twice. Oh,
yeah.
I'm confident enough. I'm down with this
bet.
Let's
do that.
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh, I'll have so much fun. I'm going to have the whole staff ready. McGregor. I keep saying that. If McGregor wins, print up a big tab, bring it over to Alex Dunham.
Just a public service announcement.
Manny's going
to
be at my
house. Hold on. Public service announcement to anybody I invite to my table. Order water and a side salad. please, none of those delicious craft cocktails. Please do not enjoy the sushi or the Maine lobster. This is my. I will allow you space at my table, and I will cover your tab if necessary, as long as that tab is tap water. And a side salad.
I can't wait for this.
So just for sake saying. Mm-hmm. So if Floyd Mayweather wins, may we add stuff afterwards?
Oh, yeah, sure. Oh.
The whole menu.
As soon as Floyd wins.
Listen,
as soon,
I want the turkey burger.
As soon as Floyd,
sandwich,
you order
the
lobster. As soon as Floyd wins, we all get lobster. That's how we do it. Lobster.
Let's do it.
You know how boxing goes. That fight's not going to get over until 2:15 in the morning, and we'll be closed.
God.
Thank God.
Oh, please, lobster. We'll come back with my gift card.
Key lime cheesecake all around.
We got a bet.
Frank Zaffrey, spirited stuff tonight as always, my friend.
I'm just glad we got a wager.
A wager I'm going to win so easily, going away.
I'm going to bring Damian Maya with me to taunt you.
I'm going to have to work on my dine and dash if I get stuck with that tab. I got to use the restroom. Stick Manny with the tab. Oh, man.
What comes up next on this station?
The Alex Dono Show.
Oh,
with Frank Zaffrey.
Boom.
We'll have the yin and the yang tonight. We've got the good news. Jeffrey Loria selling his baseball team. Thank God to Derek Jeter's group. But preseason comes at a price last night. Raekwon McMillan reportedly torn ACL. Very tough to see the young buck, his season come to an end before it even started. This has been Fight Night. Coming up next, the Alex Dono Show here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.